If you've been following the news this week, you may recall a story about a team of researchers that has isolated stem cells from amniotic fluid. Stem cells appear to have the ability to change into many types of tissue in a similar way that embryonic stem cells can do it. So, do studies such as these make those with human embryos unnecessary? The study's out in this month's issue of the journal Nature Biotechnology. We're joined now by the lead scientist on the paper for a rundown on the science and the politics of stem cells. And our number is 1-800-989-8255. Anthony Atala is a professor and chair in the Department of Urology and director of the Institute for Regenerative Medicine at Wake Forest University School of Medicine in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. He joins us today by phone from his office. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Tell us about are they true stem cells?
Well, that is exactly the question we asked ourselves about 7 years ago. You know, could we find a population of true stem cells in the amniotic fluid and the placenta? Of course, the amniotic fluid being the fluid that surrounds the developing baby while it's being carried in the mother's womb.
Mm-hmm. And their answer was?
And the answer was, indeed, there was a true stem cell population that could be found both in the amniotic fluid as well as the placenta, which is the tissue, of course, that surrounds the baby and the fluid during development.
Mm-hmm. Are these embryonic stem cells that you found?
They are not embryonic stem cells. In fact, they're a class of its own. They're neither embryonic nor adult, but they have properties of both.
Such as?
Well, for example, they're closer to human embryonic stem cells, which makes sense because developmentally, they're closer to that timeline. But like human embryonic stem cells, the cells are able to grow very rapidly. They double in number every 36 hours, which is one of the advantages, of course, of human embryonic stem cells. Mm-hmm. We also found markers consistent with human embryonic stem cells. But to our surprise, after we started growing these cells, we also found markers consistent with adult stem cells. In addition, human embryonic stem cells have the telomerase gene, which, of course, is the fountain of youth gene, if you will. And that is what allows these cells to keep growing in large quantities. And it turned out that these cells also, like human embryonic stem cells, were able to preserve their length of the telomere, which is the little end protein that gets preserved every time the cell divides, so that the cell can keep dividing and dividing without giving up after a period of time.
Why should they be in the embryonic fluid?
I'm sorry?
Why should they exist? Why should they exist in the embryonic? Why should they exist in the amniotic fluid? Where do they come from? I mean, they just...
A good question. In fact, you know, it's been known for decades that the amniotic fluid is chock full of the embryo cells. You know, the embryo is constantly shedding these cells into the amniotic fluid, and these cells are also being trapped in the placenta. And in fact, these are the same cells that are being used for diagnosis when the mother goes in for these diagnostic procedures such as amniocentesis. So we knew that they were all these cells which were present, like bone cells and cartilage and muscle cells in the amniotic fluid. And we just surmised that if these more developed cells were present, maybe there would be a true stem cell population also present within the fluid.
And now, I guess my question is, maybe you don't know yet, is why should there be a true stem cell population in the fluid?
Well, again, because at that time of the developing embryo, remember the embryo is still developing at an amazing rate. Mm-hmm. By 10 weeks, the embryo is less than the size of a lemon, of a small lemon. So the embryo is still, you know, going fully developmentally in its rate of growth with all the organs. And it just makes sense that the stem cell populations within the embryo, which are making these tissues, which are not yet even fully developed. I mean, when you look at the developmental line of organs, many of these organs are not fully developed till 6-8 months into gestation before the baby's born.
Right. So I guess, could these B cells that started out as embryonic cells and have now matured a little bit, or to become a different kind of cell?
Well, they're further down the line of development, no question about that. You can get them as early as 10 weeks later, because that's really the earliest time point that we can access these sources of tissue in the fetus.
Mm-hmm. And you have been able to direct the development of these cells into tissues.
That's correct. So these cells have been directed to become different tissue types, for example, nerve, liver, muscle, cartilage, bone, nerves, and other tissue types.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know from your past work that you're in the line of creating artificial organs. Can you direct these cells to actually create an artificial organ on some sort of structure like you used to do?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, that's how we got started in this area because, we had engineered several organs experimentally and did some also clinically, like the bladder. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, if we had our choice, we would go after the patient's own cells. There's no doubt that the best source of cells is the patient's own cells. So if you need a new bladder, we would take a small piece of your bladder and grow those cells out to make the organ. But in many cases in the human body, there are cell types that still, today, 2007, cannot be grown outside the body in large quantities. And that's where stem cells come in. And there are very specific cell types that scientists throughout still can grow, such as liver, nerve, pancreas, and these specific cell types. For us to create organs, we would need stem cell populations.
Mm-hmm. Are these amniotic cells ready for prime time in people yet?
Not at all. I think, this is still very early in its development stage. It's going to take a while before we're able to bring these technologies to patients.
And because they come from a person, would the products of what you make be rejected in someone else?
Well, that's actually another nice advantage of these cells. The fact is that you can preserve these cells after birth or during birth if they have an amniocentesis, but basically you could preserve these cells for self-use. So you can just freeze these cells down and then use these cells if there's ever any problem with that particular patient. But there's also a second way that you could utilize these cells, and that is by creating a bank of cells that would be available to other patients.
And you would take this from the bank like you would if you were looking for a match that you might be a body part, a liver or a kidney or something like that.
That's right. In fact, what would happen under these circumstances, and this has all been worked out in the transplantation field, you would need a bank of approximately 100,000 specimens to be able to provide 99% of the U.S. population with a perfect genetic match for transplantation. And that would be a lot easier to do with this source of cells because, mm-hmm. as you know, there are approximately 4.5 million births per year in the U.S. So every birth could be a potential source of stem cells from the afterbirth, mm-hmm. or what we call the placenta, and we could just retrieve those cells, bank those cells, and then have those available for other patients when the need arose.
Talking with Dr. Anthony Atala this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News about his research on stem cells from amniotic fluid. Dr. Atala, yesterday the House, as you know, passed a bill that would increase federal support for embryonic stem cell research. And opponents were already pointing toward your paper, your research, as saying that we don't need to have embryonic stem cell research anymore. We've got your work that would cover that base. How do you react to that?
Well, I think it's important to realize that these are not human embryonic stem cells, and they're different cells. These are different from human embryonic stem cells. These are different from adult stem cells. And we don't know yet, long-term, which cell would be best for what particular application.
So we should continue, you're saying, with embryonic stem cell research.
Well, I think all research is important because at the end of the day, we just don't know what cell is going to be best for what particular disease process.
Mm. So let's talk about where you go from here.
Well, a lot of what we're doing right now is really developing the cells further than we have. So in this particular publication, we have reported on some of the cells that we are working We also have other cell types in the laboratory, and we are expanding the work that we're doing with these cells. For example, with the nerve cells, we are much more advanced now than when we published the paper. So we keep working on these technologies further.
When you say advanced, in what way?
Well, for example, we now have even more functionality in terms of these specific cells. What you really try to do with these cells is get them to the point where they function at the same level as the normal cell of that specific type. So for a nerve cell, you would want that to do all the things that nerve cells do. Bone, you would want it to do everything that bone does.
So are they actually hooking up and functioning in that sense?
Well, they are actually secreting the things they're supposed to be secreting, and they are hooking up together with each other like they're supposed to do.
Wow. Sounds very exciting.
Well, we have a lot of work to do still. Even though it's exciting, of course, it's still in its early stages of development.
All right. Well, thank you for joining us. I know you've been a very busy guy this week, so thanks again for taking time to be with us.
Pleasure to be with you.
And good luck to you. Anthony Atala, professor and chair in the Department of Urology and director of the Institute for Regenerative Medicine at Wake Forest University School of Medicine in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. This program is produced by Karen Vergoth and senior producer Annette Heist. Our directors are Sarah Handel in Washington, Charles Berquist in New York. Flora Lichtman is our producer for digital media. Becky Vlamis and Carrie Wolfson worked the phones for us today. And we say thanks and goodbye to our intern, Steve Orns. He's off to other adventures in the world of science, journalism, and parenting. A new baby. Welcome to Sam Orns. Good luck, Steve. Hope you get some sleep real soon. If you'd like to write us, please send your letters to Science Friday, 4 West 43rd Street, room 306, New York, New York, 10036. Also, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com, where we have free curriculum materials for teaching science using Science Friday. Click on the teacher's link, Science Friday's Kids Connection. Also, we have podcasts and blogging and links to social networks springing up around Science Friday on Facebook. Squidoo, and also you can leave us an email there if you'd like to. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.